Jesus goes to a dinner party. That's what this is. Jesus is at a dinner party. His disciples, and apparently a crowd, are also in the background of this particular story. They're present in the scene. Though the narrative focuses only on Jesus, on Simon, and an unnamed woman, she is not given an identity. She is given more of a type, or she's become sort of a representation. We know that perhaps many of Simon's Pharisee friends are also around the table, because in verse 49, we see them wondering whether or not Jesus ought to really say something about forgiving sins, because that's God's role to do that. Early on in the story, the woman becomes the focus of attention, and it seems she's probably creating a certain level of discomfort for everybody around the table. She's doing something that's a little bit outrageous. She's at Jesus' feet. She's wiping his feet with her hair. She's crying and wetting his feet with her tears. She's anointing him with oil. And this is all just like, what is, you know, she's just, everybody's probably looking at her, and it's creating quite a stir. Jesus takes the occasion to have a teachable moment. And so we look at what he says here, and we have to figure out, what can we learn from this? My suspicion is, number one, the way he teaches this, I wouldn't want to be in Simon's shoes, because I'm guessing he gets a little bit uncomfortable about what Jesus does with this teachable moment. But anyway, we're going to try to figure out what we can learn. And I think as we see this, as we go through here, what happens is the lessons really come alive by way of contrast. There are a lot of contrast in this, okay? You'll see that as we go through. Let's begin with the contrast of two debtors. Jesus tells a story about two different people who owe money. One owes about 500 denarii, one owes 50 in today's dollars, or I should say, in the Bible dictionary that I looked at, which is probably from about 30 or 40 years ago when it was published, they said that a denarius, 50 denarii would be worth about $8. 500 denarii would be worth about $80. In today's dollars, I'm sure it's a lot more than that. But there's two significant features about this. Number one is a denarius was about a whole day's wages. So whether you want to look at that as minimum wage for a whole day or something else for a whole day, that's what you have to figure out. And the other significant feature is one debtor owes 10 times more than the other debtor does. That perhaps is the most significant feature of this little story. Considering that payments would probably only be able to be made from a small portion of one's day's wages, the rest you would have to put aside for living expenses, just like the rest of us budget everything. We pay a mortgage, we pay for bills and so forth, and we have enough left over to buy food or whatever our necessities are in clothing. Probably this larger debt would have taken years to pay off. Maybe the other one would only have taken a few months. Just depends on how much of living expenses one would have to take out of his day's wages. Okay. But of course, the real issue here is the gratitude that is felt by each of the two debtors. Both people feel relieved that they're debt-free. But Jesus asked Simon to draw the conclusion about which of those two is going to feel the most gratitude. And Simon, of course, judges correctly. He says, the one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt. Just makes sense to Simon that the experience of that person would experience a greater love for the money lender. And it's interesting to me that Jesus says which one will love the other the more. The connection here would be gratitude. But I wonder if there's a connection between love and gratitude. So just a thought. Jesus says it's love. Which one will show love? Which one will love more? Obviously, he says the one whose debt was larger and was canceled. Now, this is the moment of this is the teachable moment for Jesus. I should say this is the teachable moment by Jesus for Simon, for the disciples, and for us. And here's where Jesus begins to draw out the lesson. And again, if I were Simon, I think I'd start squirming in my seat just a little bit here because of what he does and what he says. So we move on after we've now contrasted two debtors. Now Jesus is going to contrast this woman with Simon. First of all, who were these individuals? Simon, of course, a Pharisee. A person most likely very fastidiously religious, attentive to very minute details of the law of Moses. And probably as we read about the Pharisees in other places, he was very similar in the sense that probably prone to a certain degree of self-righteousness. He would tend to all these details and feel perhaps very good about it, just like we might feel good about attending to our religious things. We know from chapter 7, verses 34 and 35, that he and his associates were very critical of Jesus. They didn't like the fact that he would spend his time with sinners, and they just thought that was improper for a prophet to do that kind of thing. It's perhaps a little bit surprising that Simon asked Jesus to come to this dinner party. Maybe not so surprising when we see how he's treated. How Jesus is treated. Who was the woman? That's the more interesting question. All it says is, she was a woman of the city who was a sinner. Many people have assumed that meant she was a prostitute. We're not told that. We do know that people seem to know who she was. Just a woman of the city who was a sinner. She is not even given a name, which perhaps tells us something about what Jesus wants us to see here. A little sidebar here. This is not Mary Magdalene, nor is this Mary, the sister of Martha, who anoints Jesus' feet later. It's neither of those two people. This is a different woman. She is not given a name. She becomes, well, she kind of shows up without an invitation. She's a party crasher. So we know something about her. She just comes in. Who she was or what her sin was really has no bearing on the lesson. I think she becomes more of a representative for us, a kind of image of the repentant sinner. So her name really is unimportant. It's what she represents that becomes very important for the lesson for us. We do not know if Jesus encountered her before the dinner. Some have speculated that maybe he did. I suspect that may be true. Because the way she comes in and just treats Jesus right away, she seems to understand certainly something about his message of forgiveness, which he offers to her later on, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But here we have the teachable moment. And this is where Jesus, in verses 44 to 47, sort of looks at her and looks at Simon, and looks at her, and looks at Simon, and looks at her, you know, and he just contrasts their behavior toward him. Number one, Simon, he says, when I came in, you didn't even give me any water to wash my feet. Not to mention the fact you didn't have some servant do it for you. But what has she done? This woman has wet my feet with her tears. Simon, you didn't give me a kiss as a greeting. But this woman, what has she done? She has been kissing my feet since she entered. Simon, you did not anoint my head with oil when I came in. But this woman has anointed my feet with perfume. Simon, well, he doesn't really say this, but it's apparent here that Simon kind of kept his distance from Jesus. And it does raise the question, why did he invite him in to begin with? If he wasn't going to show Jesus all the usual things that you would show to a guest in your house, why did he invite him? Was this strictly for show? Was Simon trying to feel Jesus out? He seems to be doing some of that because he thinks in his own mind, once this woman is touching Jesus, Jesus perceives that he's thinking, you know, what's he doing letting that woman touch him? A prophet wouldn't do that. So it appears that Simon's just sort of trying to feel Jesus at her and see whether he's really legitimate, whether he's a true prophet or not. That may be the distance. What happens here is the woman, she clings to Jesus. So the teachable moment becomes Simon versus the woman. Simon just seemed to have invited Jesus for show. But Jesus takes the moment to say, you know, Simon, she's doing better than you did. Wow. Is that any way to treat your host at dinner? Well, you know, Jesus, in fact, is the teacher here. And he makes it very clear that he is the one doing the teaching. So Simon shouldn't be surprised because Jesus tells him this parable. He asks Simon to answer the question about the parable. Then he draws out the lesson for him, both in terms of contrasting individuals. Two debtors, two individuals, and one happens to be Simon himself and this woman who has already sort of gotten everybody's attention. Now Jesus goes for the lesson itself. I'm tempted to say he goes for the throat here, but I won't. Yeah, that's, I don't know if he's doing it that way. He is telling a very distinct lesson here, is he not? According to what Jesus is saying here in verse 47, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. And if we go back to the story of the debtors, it becomes very clear that her many sins have made her feel much greater sense of gratitude and love for the one who has forgiven all of her sins. And Jesus will go on to say that those who love very little, you know, will not, or who are forgiven little, won't love very much. Seems to me, as I mentioned earlier, that this love sort of is very equated to a sense of gratitude, isn't it? And I think Jesus, by implication, is certainly trying to say here, we need a very detailed recognition of our sin to fully grasp the significance of forgiveness. If we realize what sinners we are in the sight of God, and then we can transition that into, but I've been forgiven for those things, the gratitude that results, the love that results, is greater, the greater sense of sin that we have. And I'm not trying to lay excessive guilt on anybody. I'm just trying to get us to think about the fact that we are all sinners to one degree or another in the sight of God. We all are in this woman's position. I'd like to think none of us are in the position of Simon to think that we're very righteous, because that's exactly what we are not. Once we see that we are sinners, and once the sin is forgiven, then we can respond accordingly. Let me say it the way may sound a little bit simplistic, but small forgiveness produces a small amount of love. Big forgiveness produces a big amount of love. And I think maybe a lot of this is in our own perception of ourselves. You know, the Pharisees thought they were right. They did a lot of right things. But that was part of the problem. They thought they were okay. They thought they were absolutely right. In any case here, Jesus is making a very strong point. Forgiveness, gratitude, and love, they're all intertwined. They all work together. And they produce something in us. Forgiveness in particular produces something in us when we realize what our debt is. And that's the key. Figuring out what is our particular debt. I think a further lesson that kind of draws from all this is the whole sinners contrasted with self-righteous people kind of thing. Remember at the end of Luke, or rather back in Luke chapter 7, verses 34 and 35, the Pharisees didn't like Jesus because he associated with sinners. He associated with people that they didn't think a prophet should associate with. He ate with them, he talked to them, he allowed them to touch him. See, that was strictly forbidden by the Pharisees because it was always hands off. You know, don't get your hands dirty. Don't get unclean. We've stayed fastidious in our ability to stay clean with things. I think what we have here is shades of what we're going to get later on in Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. Remember the story of the Pharisee and the publican? Two men went up to pray, one a Pharisee, one a publican. Pharisee goes up and he says, well, I'm glad I'm not like other men. kind of like this publican here. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. You know, there's the fastidiousness to religious things. But the publican, he just stood a long way off and just said to God, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus can look around at the crowd and say, which one of them went home justified before God? The publican, the sinner, the one who recognized what he was, went home. And any number of other ways, Jesus will say things like, he who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. So embedded within the lesson here, embedded within all he's talking about here, is this whole sinner versus self-righteous kind of thing going on. The lesson we draw, of course, we are debtors in the eyes of God. And it is beholden upon us also to get rid of any vestige of self-righteousness. We're not righteous because we're more holy than others. We're not righteous because we're more right than others. We're not righteous because we go to church, maybe even more than others. We come to church because we're not right, don't we? Because we know we come to worship our Creator. Because we know we come to, how should I say, solidify and reaffirm our allegiance to that Creator. That's the reason we're here. We're here because of our gratitude to our Creator and our Redeemer. And so we come humbling ourselves. Our righteousness and our confidence before God comes not because of who or what we are. It comes because of what we believe in Jesus Christ. That's the reason that we are righteous before God. And indeed, it does produce in us a kind of love and gratitude. And perhaps the more we recognize what Jesus has done to forgive us, the more love we will show to him and to others. We kind of live also, do we not, in two contrasting worlds? First, we are indeed called to come out from among the sinful ways of those around us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, verses chapter 7, to chapter 7 and verse 1, Paul tells the Corinthians, says, come out from among them, be separate. You know, live differently, appear to be differently. I should say be different than the nations around you. Live a different life. Live a life of holiness. Bring your sanctification to complete fulfillment by becoming more and more like Christ. At the same time, Paul has also told those same Corinthians in the first letter he wrote to them that you are called to live among sinners, to be an influence upon them, acting as salt and light among them, holding out the message of the gospel. We don't separate ourselves to the point of, well, we're just better than you guys. We live among them. We live to be different. We live to show them something different. We live the message of the gospel that they might also be attracted to the kingdom of God. Not elevating ourselves above them, but humbling ourselves and befriending sinners, just as Jesus befriended sinners. And you can read that in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 and 10, and also 1 Peter chapter 2, 11 and 12. We live in a world that is fallen and darkened. And we bring light and salt to that world. Do we not love because we are forgiven? That's our motivation. That's what we sense. We have been forgiven by God, and therefore, we act graciously to others. Paul, when he writes to Timothy, he says, you know, I'm the chief of sinners. He says, but because I knew I was the chief of sinners, I acted on God's grace maybe more than anybody else, because I knew what I was before I came. And so Paul became the apostle to the Gentiles. We love because we are forgiven, not because we have earned it. And so I conclude simply by encouraging us to remember today to, number one, recognize your sin, accept God's forgiveness, and walk every day humbly with him.